Hello, hello. This is producer Ben, and I just wanted to come on real quick and ask that if you could please leave us a dollar or two in the old tip jar at thequestatlanta.com. It helps us out a ton. It helps keep the lights on here at AM 1160, here at Honest to God, and we'd really appreciate it. You can do your little Catholic tithe. Helps us out. Helps you out. Spiritually? Probably. All right. Thanks so much. Enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Nick. Today on Honest to God, we discuss the life and faith journey of St. Maximilian Kolbe. Find out about two filmmakers' pilgrimage to Poland to tell the story of the inspirational saint. Join our panel as they discuss the personal connection to St. Maximilian Kolbe, his story, and the international cast and crew involved in the production of this movie.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, super pumped to be here. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God on AM 1160, The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. Got a good show today. Feeling good about the show.
It's going to be a good one, I think. Yeah.
I'm pumped to be here. It's going to be killer. Some of my favorite people.
Talking about some Catholic stuff on Catholic radio.
We are going to do that. We got producer Julian producing over there.
Glad to be here.
Looking good.
Well, thank you.
Tickling the keys.
I'm getting better at it. I kind of know the layout of the land now, I think.
We've got friend of the show, an international filmmaker, Patrick over there.
Howdy.
Rock and rolling. He's a pro. He knows exactly what he's doing. Yeah, we have Benji, who has no idea what he's doing. This is his first time. But he's got great hair, and you can't use that as a fun fact. I feel like it's like the third time I've mentioned that. But really, if you're listening, go on YouTube right now just to check out Benji's hair. It's on point.
Yeah. In fact, Benji, can you move your microphone a little bit closer to you, please? Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And then pull it in. There you go. Yeah.
Is that good?
That's good, yeah.
And then we've got all the way from the ancient storied city of Athens.
That's right.
Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the one in Greece? On the Aegean
Sea? Just say, yeah, to make it more interesting.
Attica Peninsula? No dogs. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Really appreciate all that legwork you guys put in against Emperor Darius I of Persia.
Oh, yes.
Back in the day, man.
Yeah.
We'd all be speaking Farsi or something right
now.
Yeah,
who knows?
Gotten his way.
Could have been completely different, yeah.
Yeah, so good job. But from the University of Georgia, right? Are you a student?
Right. Yeah. I am a graduate student, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Fantastic. So we got a good show today. We're going to be talking a lot about Maximilian Kolbe because you two over there, Patrick, Benji, just made a movie. Mm-hmm. And apparently it's going great, really successful. We're going to get into all of that here in a second. But first, we got to pray. Mm-hmm. We get to pray, not we gotta pray.
Mm-hmm. We will.
And then
pray.
we've got some fun facts. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, actually. You guys each have three. You
should be
one.
About nine.
Yeah, you're a veteran. You know what you're doing. Anybody want to volunteer to start us off in prayer? No, come on, one of you guys.
Sure,
you guys. Nice. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Lord, we thank you for bringing us together today. You've said wherever two or three are gathered in your name, there you also will be. Come join us in the Spirit. Guide us as we have this discussion, as we kind of delve into the evidence of you working in the world through your saints, and help us to speak with wisdom and prudence. And we ask all these things as we ask for the intercession of your Blessed Mother. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Amen.
Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
We give him a 90.
90?
90%.
Yeah. Oh, all right. I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. That's passing.
You went with a rote prayer ending, which is fine. It's not original, right? But you threw in the scripture there, right?
Yeah.
With the two or three are gathered in your name.
Mm-hmm.
Lord. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a 90. Yeah. That's a high score. Most of the guys don't get 90s.
No.
Girls will get 90s because they get a girl bonus. Because
I
feel bad.
Right. Yeah, you can't tell them they got a 70.
Exactly. I'm like, not about to tell Tessa, who was on here last time. That prayer was terrible. It wasn't Tessa. You killed it. You rocked it. But I couldn't do that. So they all get like a 5-point girl bonus.
Right.
I have five children, four of them are daughters, mm-hmm. and I just
girl dad, you know
yeah,
how it works.
Got a soft spot for them. They get the extra points.
Mm-hmm.
So cool.
Join in our scoring of prayers. Comment
yes.
down below.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Your score of this
submit
prayer.
Your score.
I'm slowly starting to develop an actual like
a rubric.
Yeah, like rubric in my mind for how those prayers work. And yeah, it's gonna get there. I might write it down one day.
Mm-hmm.
And not tell anybody. Always have the new person pray, and then
figure out. And then you pull out the sheet of paper and start circling things. And you're like, well, you hit this, this, this.
Because if there's one thing that I feel like our Lord really wants us to do, it's to harshly judge the way others speak to him.
That's right. Yeah, I think he said that somewhere.
It's in there. It's in one of those. Yeah.
Deuteronomy, maybe?
Or... It's in a obscure book. Martin Luther tried to get rid of it.
Oh, yeah. One of those.
But anyway, I'm really excited about today's show. I think it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. We're gonna fly through some fun facts, and then I want to talk about all things Maximilian Kolbe and Poland and all stuff. So you want to lead us off with three fun facts?
Sure, can do. So first fun fact, when I was 18 years old, I fell 30 feet to the ground and survived.
Is there any story to that?
There is a further story to that. Do you want me to
give you a short version? I'm interested.
Yeah. So I was working at a camp, and one of my responsibilities was to help run the zip line.
Sure.
And it was at the end of like a little challenge course, like they had high ropes course. And so I'm up there one day. It was the end of the summer. It was like the last day I could have possibly been there. And I'm sitting up on the platform. I've sent maybe four or five kids down. It's about 4 p.m. getting ready to end the day. So I clear all the stuff off the platform and clip myself in. We had gotten into the habit, some of us, of doing this thing where you'd clip in the back of the harness. There was a weight-bearing loop back there, so it should have been fine. I had done it myself four or five times at least. And so I clip in the back, I call down to the end to make sure they know I'm coming, step off, and as you do this, that's the Superman. That's what they call it. You just kind of spread your arms and fall face first off the platform.
Oof.
Nothing like it. Exhilarating. But this time, I go off, and right as your weight comes on the line, it's real steep at first, and then it kind of hits a low there, gets you up to speed. And I hit that point, and I hear a snap.
Oh!
And I'm just like, well, that's not supposed to happen. And I black out, wake up on the ground. And
thank goodness you woke up at all.
Yeah,
that's wild.
No, seriously. It was ride to the hospital, everything. A lot of good surgeons who were able to take care of me.
What was the damage?
I almost blew my heart up.
Great.
And I broke my arm.
So awful, right?
So nice surgery scar there. Yeah.
Chicks dig scars.
That's right. Yeah, you should see the guy who did this to me. He's still in the hospital. I was very well taken care of after that. God took care of me there. My dad kept joking that I must have crushed my guardian angel flat.
Right.
But
other than a broken arm and a...
Broken arm and a pseudoaneurysm in the heart. And it was all fixed up.
I mean, like all things considered, that sounds like a pretty good outcome.
It was the best outcome I could have asked.
Yeah.
Reason 486 not to go zip line.
Wait, okay, yeah, I actually had that question. Did the zip line break or the harness?
So it's kind of not clear still. Okay. It looked like they had to cut the harness off me afterwards, so it wasn't entirely clear whether some part of the harness failed because they'd already cut it apart. Mm-hmm. Most likely what had happened was that I was clipped into something that was not the harness.
Gotcha.
Maybe a belt loop or something, but it was hard to tell.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You see, John Henry, the investigation is on a list with the federal government, and they just haven't gotten to him yet.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they haven't gotten to it yet. No.
It's not something super important like... I don't know, parents who protest school board meetings or
It keeps moving
right
down
now.
On the priority list.
Yeah, that's fair. Somebody could be misgendering someone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's still going to count as one, but that was a really good one.
That's one. The second one, I have two kind of indirect personal connections to the saint who's the subject of this podcast.
Okay.
I'll just get into those later when we're in the middle of
it. Cool, sure.
As it comes up. And then the third one is an interesting theology fact I learned recently. I'd always been curious about this. So you know how in the Book of Wisdom and the other wisdom books, wisdom is personified as a she, right? Mm-hmm. Send me your holy wisdom from your throne. And I was reading a book recently, actually this book, The Light of Christ, Father Thomas Joseph White.
Beautiful.
In a philosophy
reading group. That's a
really
good plug. And, I had no idea that was in your
life. It's good. Yeah, it's good. And he's talking about Jesus being the wisdom which proceeds from the Father. Hmm. So the fact that the wisdom who is personified in the Book of Wisdom as a she is yet Jesus Christ, who we know came as a man,
right.
I think is really interesting. And it kind of points at the fact that God is so far transcending our conceptions of gender and how humanity works. He's so far beyond that.
Right. And just for the record, to clarify, I know you're not saying this, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. he's not saying that God is hermaphroditic or something
that.
He
said, That's right.
Yeah, very good.
Beyond.
Jesus Christ was a dude. Yeah.
Came as a man.
That's awesome. What's the book one more time?
This is Father Thomas Joseph White, The Light of Christ.
Nice.
Yeah, very good stuff.
Cool. I like
total synthesis of the Catholic.
And you don't get paid at all for that?
No, not at all. I just think it's a good book. Not yet.
I like it. All right, Benji, that was pretty solid, man. Yeah. Like I do a lot of ranking or a lot of judging other people's fun facts. That might be the best fun fact since the girl who always wore her socks inside out, which blew my mind.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that weird?
That's got to be uncomfortable. Weird,
right? That's what I said. She said, no, it is actually more comfortable. And she's a liar because I tried it once.
And you're like, no. I was like, no. Yeah. Hmm.
You did your fun facts in your English accent.
No.
He has the most natural sounding English accent. Like, it's not that over. It's like, he can talk to people. If he came in here speaking in English, you would think he was from London or something. Because it's like really just.
If I did it back with you, like we did it back and forth, I would sound like a bigoted stereotype. Like the most cockney, I would genuinely try to do it, but I'm just terrible with accents.
That's hilarious. That's going to be hard to follow up. let's see. So first fact, something about me. Mm. My dad, my name is Benjamin. My dad originally was going to name me Benjamin Franklin Suarez.
Whoa.
And so, yeah. And so, because growing up, like people would always say like Benjamin Franklin, right? Like kind of as a little joke. But it wasn't just a joke. Like, it was going to be official at one point.
Is your dad just a big fan of Benjamin Franklin?
He loves the Founding Fathers. But, like, the funnier thing is his brothers are named, like, ironically after, like, some of the Founding Fathers, too. Like, I have a, like, uncle named George, right? And I have another uncle named, like, Alexander. Mm. And so it's, like, it's kind of like this, like, ironic thing. But
wait, so this is your uncle. So your granddad also liked the Founding Father thing.
No, that was just by complete accident.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah. And then my dad is named Benjamin also. So, like, crazy.
I dig that. I think that's neat.
Right, yeah. Right. Second fact.
Benjamin Franklin's a friend of the show. We're a big fan of the Founding Fathers.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
He's going to be on after Jeff Goldblum. Next week. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Oh, wow. No,
yeah, stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe or you won't be able to see it. You have to comment 100 times.
And then you'll see 100
our
times.
Exclusive interview with Benjamin Franklin, who died in 1790. Yeah, it's wild. It'll blow your mind.
And then we will send you an email at the link.
Yep, we will. The video.
Second fun fact, the word for tomato in Italian, pomodoro, comes from the, basically, it means like fruit of gold or apple of gold, because when the Italians came to the New World, tomatoes weren't in the old world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so they used to have like a goldish kind of yellow color.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they brought it back, it was pomodoro. And it's been pomodoro now.
And
so,
the translation is golden apple?
Golden apple, something like that.
Yeah. That's right, Italians. Yeah, let's take a minute to throw some shade at the Europeans. Potatoes, tomatoes, melons, right? Like all melons?
Missing out on
I think
all
so.
Of them.
Yeah. Citrus fruit.
Yeah.
There's a ton of them. That was all us.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't. I didn't have anything to do with it. But I was smart enough to come over here where all this cool stuff was.
And
I'm pretty sure, like corn. I know corn was us. Mm-hmm. It was the New World. Mm-hmm. It was just like everybody only ate like sheep and cabbage in Europe. That's a fact.
That's a sad existence.
Yeah. I had an argument with somebody the other day because we were in up in Washington, D.C. and it was snowing. They were talking about how pretty it was. And I was talking about how much I hate snow. Mm. I don't like snow. And they said, that's ridiculous. And it is. I was just kind of just being contrarian too
a little bit.
But I said, my ancestors left Europe in some frozen hellscape over there in Northern Europe and moved here. And I would feel like I was spitting in my ancestors' faces if I embraced snow. They moved to Georgia. Snows twice a year. So big shout out to John Robert Spann in 1590, who came over and settled in Virginia. He was a smart guy.
Yeah.
He's actually an Anglican priest, I think. We did the whole ancestry thing. It's interesting. Yeah.
It's cool.
All right, I'm sorry. I didn't do that.
Your fun fact.
Yeah. All that came from tomatoes.
Let's see. Third fun fact. In Polish, the word for like cool, like if you want to see something's cool, is spoko. So like basically, like Polish is really hard. And so like on set, I would like just try to like use that as much as possible in like any context.
What
right?
is it?
Spoko. Like cool. If like something's like cool.
With an O at the end, not an L. Spoko.
Spoko. Yeah. So like if I'd be like, if something would be going wrong, I'd be like, nie bardzo spoko. Like I'd be like, not cool, bro. And I just use that in like any context. Cause like it's a hard language. So, like,
right.
Yeah. sparkle.
That's cool. All right, I like that. I like that. All right, Patrick, you just owe us one, man, so make it good.
Yeah, I, what's it called? So actually on my flight back from Poland, I rewatched the whole trilogy, the trilogy of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
The original, and it's actually has really great and deeply like rooted symbolism. Whoa. And like, it's actually a pretty deep film. Think. So it's like, it seemed, it's, and what's funny is like, it has like this mythological trajectory, and then the last film I saw with the, when they had to look for the Fountain of Youth, yeah, and stuff, it ended with the Spanish conquistadors crushing, yeah, it, and
who
saying,
are the good guys?
Yeah, and crushed it, and yes, said, and said, no more with this like pagan worship, yes, like Christ is king. And it was like a perfect ending, yeah, to like that whole trilogy thing, and it was just like really based.
My favorite genre of film is films where Catholics are the bad guys, but they're actually the good guys if you think about it. Right. There was I was literally gonna bring up that point from the third one, how they're the whole time it's like the pirates versus the British, oh no, the Spanish, let's work together. But there are so many movies. I remember watching, it was some Queen Elizabeth biopic or something, and I think it was Elizabeth Golden Years, and the Spanish are the bad guys. The whole story is about the Spanish Armada, and there's this scene, and it's supposed to be the bad guys, and they're unfurling the masts on their giant warships, yeah, and it's a huge crucifix, and I'm so amped. I know how this Spanish, I know how that ends, but I'm like, maybe this time, maybe we can get them, maybe we can land there. I was just saying this the other show, and so I'll make it really quick, but we got an anti-Catholic pamphlet on our car basically the other day. We've got big picture of our mother on the, or Our Lady on the back and all this stuff. And it was talking about how the Catholic Church was bad, and we valued like the Vatican and our, like the Catholics over everyone else, and so that we were the true church, and there's all these things. And I read it with my kids, and at the end I said, my kids are 11 and younger, but we like talked about it and kind of laughed about it and talked about, you know, these misperceptions. But then I said, be the Catholic that these people think you are. Be them. Yeah, that's cool. Please let us actually be that cool and bad and dedicated to our faith and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
sir. Yes, sir.
All right, we don't have a lot of time. All right, we're flying here. George, do you have a quick fun fact?
I can give you a quick fun fact. Since we're talking about saints, and one of my favorite saints is Saint Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
My wife is the grand producer of my life, next to the Lord, of course. But
right.
We share our anniversary with her canonization date. Not the day we were married, but September 4th is our wedding anniversary. So it was our sixth wedding anniversary that she became a saint.
She's another friend of the show.
And we were all together actually with her family and just a bunch of people. And it was just a beautiful time. And then all of a sudden she became a saint.
Wow.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So speaking of Mother Teresa, who was canonized, someone else was canonized. Do you know who?
There's a lot of people.
Same with Maximilian Kolbe. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
I went to school for Segways, Harvard School for Segways. So that's why that was so smooth.
Yield better.
So I really want to dig into this. I want to talk about all that. Like, what was the inspiration for the film? I have so many questions. I would love for you just to kind of start with what you did and why you did it.
Yeah. So I was involved. I was part of the crew, so I was first AC, which is a first camera assistant. My role was to basically, it's called capture follow focus. So when the camera is flying around and moving, I just made sure that everything in the shot was in focus and nothing ever that didn't need to be out of focus wasn't, right? So that was my role. And then secondary role was I was a second camera operator. So anytime they needed two cameras to run on a particular scene, I would operate the second camera. And obviously, being that this was in comparatively to looking at other films, like a low budget film, we all did a little bit of everything, right? Yeah. So we had like our official credited roles, but we all helped in all different types of departments just to make sure this movie happened. So, I mean, my second language is Polish, so I helped with producers sometimes if someone didn't speak English or something, no other Polish person was available, help with making calls and stuff like that. All of us did a little bit of everything on there specifically.
What was your role, Benji?
I was gaffer. So that's basically like the person in charge of like lighting and getting like electricity to all the departments and stuff like that. But like he was saying, we were all like bouncing around like at times like different departments. And so like at some times, like I was helping with like camera, like swapping batteries, right? Or like helping them with like their rig and stuff like that. So like we were all kind of doing like multiple roles.
And how did you guys get on board with this whole production?
Yeah, so shout out to Kathleen. Anthony reached out to her because she used to work in film. She didn't want to be involved in the film anymore. And so she just immediately was like, just reach out to Patrick.
Right.
And so I connected with Anthony. And at the time, he was still kind of in the phase of... He's the director and writer of the film. Oh, so Anthony, cool. His name is Anthony D'Ambroso. And I got to talk to him here and learn a little bit of the project. And at one point, he was thinking about shooting it in Atlanta because he heard about the tax credits and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And but at the end, obviously, it didn't work out. He felt that the best thing to do, especially trying to keep it as realistic as possible, like, if we were just looking for particular architecture and stuff, it would just be easier to find that in Poland and just shoot it there. That was
obviously the right answer, right?
So like,
shoot in Poland.
Yeah. And then the other benefit was he, with the budget he was able to get for the principal photography, he was able to go a lot further with his budget there than he would here, right? So, so I basically was, when Anthony came here to visit, he also did some like pitching to certain people to try to find more people that, initially before he started production, to see gauge interest and see if we can get any more funding and stuff, also do like minor location scouting and stuff. Mm-hmm. At some point he reached out to me and said he would love to have me to be part of the crew of the film in the camera department. And so I said yes. And then I saw a post that they were looking on Instagram for more people to help, right? Mm-hmm. On the set. So I met Benji a few months before I met Anthony, when I learned he worked in film too. And so, and then Benji also helped me on one of my shorts. And so Benji was like immediately popped in my head. And so I reached out to Benji and I was like, hey, they're looking for more crew members. Like, just reach out to them, see if you can get on this. And so that's how Benji got on the project.
And I'm sorry, we should have opened with this, but what's the name of the film?
Triumph of the Heart.
Triumph of the Heart.
Yeah, okay. So it's a take. So basically, most of the ideologies and stuff came from kind of for the Nazis was Triumph of the Will. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of like the heart winning that, like the heart ended up winning. It wasn't the will, it was the heart that won, right? So that's great. Take on that.
And what is the film a biopic on Maximilian Kolbe, or is it just his time in Auschwitz? Or
I feel like it's a very unique way, like the way, the movie set up. It's not like your traditional like biopic of like from start to finish. Like it kind of bounces around a bit, but the story really starts, you know, because everybody knows, I guess, the end, right, of Saint Maximilian Kolbe, mm-hmm. like him stepping out of line and giving his life for the other prisoner. But that's really where our like the story begins. And so the movie is really about the time in the cell with the nine other men. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I don't want to give away too much, but there is like they do go into like his past and like the amazing things that he did in his life.
It was like short flashback scenes. So,
oh, that's cool. Because I know nothing about Maximilian Kolbe before he's in camp and says, no, take me instead.
Yeah. So to give a little bit of Anthony would obviously be better to speak on this, mm-hmm. but from what I've learned from him is he basically went through, he grew up with a family that was very theologically like sound, right? Mm-hmm. So his father is a professional, like, theological professor. His mom, I think, does something within youth ministry or like theology also. Mm-hmm. So there was no shortage as far as like intellectualism about the faith in his household.
Right.
He even went into seminary at some point, but through different events in his life, he had like a falling away from the faith. And so everybody was trying to explain his predicament and stuff through an intellectualism. Mm-hmm. And that didn't necessarily work for him to bring him back to God, you can say. And so he learned about St. Maximilian Kolbe and he felt like he was in a dark cell. So meditated upon Kolbe, he felt like he was in there together with him and it got him thinking like, I'm in this dark place and clearly was so this other man. Like, how was he able to still keep the faith and on top of that, give hope to the nine other men in there with him when they were facing death?
Right.
And he not even just dying, but ended up to some extent thriving in there, like within context of faith. So that may give him a realization that there's also something very human about us that's beyond just the intellectual of like quoting St. Thomas Aquinas, like Summa or anything like that. Like sometimes we just want someone to listen to us or give us a hug. So that's kind of where it comes, like where it comes from to some extent of like that background. So it doesn't focus as much on like specific facts or details as much as kind of like an experience of being in that cell with Kolbe.
I feel like as Catholics, and I don't think this is an actual heresy, but I'll call it a heresy. It's really tempting to fall into a heresy of intellectualism because the church is right and I can just about prove it. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's a good thing, but it can be dangerous because I've gotten into this. I've alluded to this a little bit before on the show, but my whole conversion initially was a total conversion of the mind for the sake of pride and the fact that this was interesting and people around me weren't like this, but I could beat them in arguments and I could understand. And I got really into the philosophy and the theology of it without any of the heart stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Without any actual connection, any real relationship with our Lord. Mm-hmm. And that's so lame, man. You have these guys who their whole personality becomes like Catholic nerds.
Yeah.
And like there's a place for it.
I'm that's an apologist. Important. Yeah. But you can't be just an apologist.
Right. Exactly. If your goal boils down to like, I can beat all the pop atheist losers in debates, like then congratulations. As you're saying,
it's just about pride.
Yeah, exactly. But who can, it's all turning it back in on you instead of turning outwards of yourself, which is what we're called to do. Especially as men, but as human beings, right? Mm-hmm. It was just back on me. And the fact that we have that intellectual tradition is a huge blessing and can be super dangerous. I'm almost envious sometimes of the Baptist or the non-denominational, Christians who will just go off on their love for Jesus. And you just need to accept Jesus because you know what? At the end of the day, you really do just need to accept Jesus.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously I'm not downplaying the sacraments or anything like that, but from an intellectual standpoint, what you really need is to understand that Christ died for you and he loves you and he wants you to be with him eternally. And that is a feeling thing. You can't intellectualize that.
Right. Wow. Right.
So that's cool.
Yeah. And what was beautiful about being on that crew, I think maybe Benji can speak to this more also, was Anthony also made sure that while we were working on this film, that we were all kind of participating and meditating upon the story as we are working on it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so obviously the 10 actors that were in the cell, you know, you kind of have to put yourself in that space. You hear the stories of like people playing the Joker or whatever caused them to go into depression and stuff. So it's like kind of a similar thing. Like they had to go to certain dark places and kind of like act that out. And so he wanted to make sure that they weren't alone in going through that and made sure that the crew to some extent was also meditating upon that, understanding why we were there.
Right.
And so anytime an actor or somebody was going through something, even if it was like something outside of the film, just like in their own personal lives, we're all there available to kind of like talk to each other. So to some extent, I say that this was almost more of a pilgrimage than it was just work, right? Because we were all kind of like meditating and walking the footsteps to some extent of Kolbe and those Auschwitz prisoners while we were working on this film. And so I don't know if you have like,
Listen, I really want you to dive into that here in a second, but we are almost at time for break. So let's pick up with that, because that whole idea of this thing being not just you're making a movie, right? and that seems dumbed down now because in, you know, pop culture and all of that. We're going to dive back in here in a second with Benji. And I really want to, I don't know, hone in on that idea of pilgrimage, this being a pilgrimage. But first, I do have to say a quick word from our sponsor, which ironically is just the concept of Italian sausages. All the not the Polish sausage, guys. This episode, we don't plan this out ahead of time. I'm sorry. This has been booked for years. Italian sausage. Go out today and buy yourself some Italian sausage. And then it told me to say not kielbasa four times. I don't know. I don't get it. That's just what the what our corporate overlords have given me. So that's where we are right
shame,
now.
Shame, shame.
Big AM Catholic Radio. Yeah, we gotta make that money. So yeah, check out some Italian sausage. Benji, I'd love for you to talk about your involvement, especially in that aspect of this sort of being a pilgrimage.
Yeah, so I think like that's the perfect way to describe it. So when we were done shooting, so the way we shot things is like we shot everything that takes place outside of the cell, like mainly everything beforehand. Like those were like the first things that we shot. But right before we went to the cell and started prepping that, we actually got to go to Auschwitz, the crew, right, and the cast. And so like we all had like obviously like a profound experience there. And before we got to go to I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's called the Labyrinth. Is it?
The Labyrinth, yeah.
Yeah. And it's basically like a church, a Catholic church that's near Auschwitz, and there's a museum that's dedicated to Saint Maximilian Kolbe that was painted and drawn by a survivor of Auschwitz who witnessed these things that Saint Maximilian Kolbe was doing. And so we first went there and had like this really profound experience, because like if you see like the images, they're very disturbing.
Yeah, he was, his name I think was Marcin Kawaje, the artist that did them, but he survived all five. I think there were five concentration camps. He went to every single one and survived all of them, which is a miracle on its own. But he basically, you know, he was asked a lot to talk about his experience and didn't want to talk about it for a long time. And then one day had a stroke and realized that there might be a time where he might not be able to tell the story. So he was an artist. So he just at some point something was bringing, and he just started drawing. Like they say, it was like nonstop, almost like a computer, just kept drawing different images that would come to his head from his experience. And these, I mean, you felt like you were in his brain at the what he was going through. And
that's wild.
They're not just kind of like, once again, these, they were very kind of like mythological images. Like he had one that portrayed Auschwitz as if it was like the Book of Revelation. So he had like the Nazis as like these giant beasts and stuff. And all the people were being like, you know, rushed along into like the fire and just like different stuff like that. But yeah, that was like... You know, that was kind of like kind of the process for Anthony also to help us a little bit, like really walk into that space to understand like where some of like his inspiration and like where some of this was coming from.
And were you all, the whole crew, cast and crew, were you all together sort of going
for the most part,
going to Auschwitz, going and doing this?
I mean, once in a while, there was certain times that we were like split up into like team. So if we had a day off, like I don't know, like sometimes they would have like a girls' night, so all the girls would go somewhere and like the guys whatever. But for the most part, we like we did go to most of the places together.
To experience that's really cool. And in terms of like the faith of the cast and crew, was everyone involved Catholic?
No. So it's interesting. Yeah. It was there was a small handful of us that was Catholic, and then there's a small group of Protestants, and then there was a ton of people that either fell away from the Catholic faith or were just non-believers, which is actually also interesting, because we had like one actor that took on, one of the reasons he wanted to do the role he was doing was to kind of reconnect with his great-grandfather that was Polish. He was from London. And, you know, in that process, he also wanted to really understand who Maximilian Kolbe was, right? And so a lot of his identity was through the Catholic faith. And so at some point, he started asking if he could come to Mass with us just to understand who Kolbe was, right? So that's a great example of, like, why stories are so important. Because when you want to participate with that story and really get to know that character or whatever, like, take on that role model, you have to do what they did, right? And so, like... him just playing the role, not being a believer, wanted to go to Mass. Because like through Maximilian Kolbe, he saw that there had to be something there if it drove him to be, you know, a martyr in Auschwitz kind of thing.
That's huge.
Yeah. So that's, I think, a great example of like the spirit of that film is like that kind of thing. Yeah.
I'd love to talk a little more. You brought up earlier, Patrick, the actors who were playing, who were actually in the cell. Right. And the impact that had on them. And I mean, I'm not in the movie production world. Right. So my terminology is probably going to be off. But in regards to, I mean, was it sort of like a method acting? Was it like a Daniel Day-Lewis thing? I mean, or was it just the headspace of I am in this concentration camp that was difficult for these guys?
Different actors have different techniques. Some of them just take it on as like performance and not necessarily like that deeply enter that space. We had a couple that were like method acting, but it varies based on individual of like how they feel most comfortable approaching that. But
were the actors mostly American?
Did we have any American actors?
No. Yeah. Well, Freddie was from Miami, and then we had the I forget his name. He was from the older guy that was there.
Karnowski was
from the U.S. So two of them were from the U.S. And we had some extras and stuff that came in from the U.S. too that played smaller roles. But majority of them were either from... We had, obviously, a ton from Poland, a couple from the U.K., and then one guy from Ukraine, Serbia.
Wow. Yeah.
So they were like all over, from a little bit of all over.
And I know you don't want to reveal too much about the story, but was there an emphasis on historical accuracy, or was this more of a... I don't know, was it more about the... emotional triumph of the heart sort of aspect, ephemerally or something?
Yeah, I mean, so as far as building the world, it definitely had, we were aiming for accuracy as much as possible. Though, like, we didn't film it in Auschwitz because that's like a whole another thing, but also as far as like space goes, their cell was actually a lot smaller than the one we used to film in, right? So our cell was like a luxury compared to the cell they were right. staying in.
The cell was like smaller than this room. It was probably like almost half the size of this
and
entire room.
And you have to imagine like 10 men being in a cell like that.
Right,
But we did make sure, for example, we had that window with bars and we did put up like they had like these little concrete walls up so no one can really see outside. They could only see the sky.
Right.
So we did have like an attention to details, but I think definitely the driving force behind it was the kind of like you can say the soul or spirit of Colby over historical accuracies for the most part. But there was once again, that's not to say that it was complete poetic literature. There was definitely attention to like historical elements.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I want to get into Maximilian Colby the man a little bit because I think that's something that that. Like I said earlier, that I realized in preparing for this show that I don't know that much about him, aside from the events that we all know, right? Mm-hmm. Most Catholics know, we hear that story. You said you had some connections to him, Nick.
Yeah, so the first one is a little bit more personal. The second one, I think, will segue pretty well into what you want to talk about there. The first one is the town I went to grade school in, back in Indiana, actually. I've come a long way here. Munster, Indiana, there is a monastery there of the Discalced Carmelite Fathers.
Okay.
And they are Polish, most of them. So they have a shrine there to Maximilian Kolbe. So, we did, there was some Boy Scouts, outings. We would camp there. We would go visit there for school field trips or whatever. It was just down the road.
Right.
So I had a consciousness of his story and the sacrifice that he made from a pretty young age. And then the other one, recently, actually last year ending on Our Lady of Fatima, I did a Marian consecration. If you're familiar with 33 Days to Morning Glory.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so the second chapter of that booklet is about Maximilian Kolbe's kind of perception and kind of theology about Mary.
Right.
So one of the really interesting things that he talks about in the excerpts of his writing that they use in that consecration is the idea that the Holy Spirit we can speak of as the spouse of Mary, in really even a deeper way than we can talk about man and wife being spouse to each other. So I thought that was pretty interesting because I had never run into.
Are there a lot of writings from Kolbe from before his?
Yeah. I mean,
ever.
Right. So my understanding is that he had a fairly, successful career as a priest before he was put in the concentration camp. He was actually Franciscan, I think conventual Franciscan friars. Okay. Yeah. And so I think he was sent several places, Japan, among other places.
Japan is a pretty interesting story on its own because he went there with a group of friars not knowing the language at all and started a magazine called the Militia Immaculata to spread the faith.
And Japan was not a great place to be Catholic.
No. Yeah. And so like they went there and he made it work. They somehow got like printing presses. I don't know how they learned the language, but somehow I must have connected with people, got going, and they got a whole printing of this magazine going of to help spread the faith, particularly through like Mariology and the use of the magazine.
And that would have been Imperial Japan.
It wasn't just that, it was Nagasaki. So like when the bomb dropped, it didn't even touch the their monastery. Like I think it, like just their windows got blown out or something that. But it was like it wasn't touched. Like
I believe
that's beautiful.
Yeah, the monastery that they founded there was on the other side of a mountain from where the bomb was dropped. And one of the really sad things about not the bomb being dropped in Nagasaki was, aside from the massive loss of life, the bombardiers had a priority list of targets to hit. So I think the first one was an arms factory. The second one was some kind of military installation. And the third one, which they had to deviate to because of fog, was the Catholic Cathedral in Nagasaki. So they dropped the bomb right on the cathedral.
So why is that? Why was that?
It was
third
the next biggest
list?
Thing in the city.
Wow.
Yeah. So the church had been built on one side of this mountain. And I believe when they were founding the monastery, they had thought initially about putting it on that side of the mountain also. But for some reason, they decided to have it on the other side. Monastery survived. Mm-hmm. The church was destroyed.
And do we know how long was Kolbe in Japan? Sorry, I'm just super interested in these Maximilian Kolbe facts now.
I think it was 3 or 4 years, maybe.
I don't know the complete details as far as like how long he was there.
Yeah,
and he was Polish. He was born in Poland.
He was Polish. I believe he never, I don't think, got to meet his father. He grew up with his mother. So some people say maybe that's why he had such a strong pull towards Mary, because he was very close to his mother.
Right.
But what I want to point out, because I feel like it's very important, is that, you know, we know that Mary, in a way, pointed Christ towards the cross, right? Like when it's said in the wedding of Cana, when she says, "Do as his will," that was like the start of his ministry, pointing him towards where he needed to be. Mm-hmm. And so Kolbe had the same kind of pattern where he was so close to Mary and loved her so much that to some extent she also pointed him to descend into death, into the cell in Auschwitz, to die, you can say, for the redemption of the sins of like those there.
Right.
And so she followed a very Christ-like pattern, and it happened through his very dedication to Mary, right? So that just shows how Mary is always going to point to her son, and you're going to end up kind of like really close to Christ because of her, right? She's always, she's never pointing towards herself, but always there. And he, in some way, was crucified on the cross in Auschwitz.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
well, to continue with that thought, actually, there's a story that it popped up in the consecration, also in the reading I was doing before this, where he is a very young boy. He said he saw a vision of Mary.
Yeah.
Where she offers the crowns, that one?
Right.
Yeah, please tell
that. So he says, it was in the middle of the night, and I was praying, and I was asking God what he wanted me to do with my life. I think he was like 6 or 7, so he was very young. He had just kind of realized, like, oh, I have to do something, and I want to do something important with what God has given me. And so he says that Mary appears to him, and she offers, I think it's crowns in one translation and roses in another, I think. He says, she offers me 2 roses or 2 crowns, and one is white and one is red. And she says, the white one represents purity and the red represents martyrdom. And which one will you pick? And he says, I'll take both.
Right.
So then, you know, his path leads him to becoming a friar, becoming a priest, taking a vow of chastity. And so that's one of the things, that was focused on in the consecration, was this kind of, the purity of the white, and how becoming a friar fulfilled that. And then kind of his purity of intention, as we're talking about, his dedication to Mary and his dedication to spreading the word of God in these far-flung places. And then the red crown, the red rose, is said to be, this is fulfilled when he dies in Auschwitz.
So I want to zoom out a little bit. I feel like we started real tight in, and we're sort of working our way out, and that was not on purpose, but that's just sort of the way it's going. This question is kind of directed at Patrick, because I feel like he would have a lot more knowledge about this than I would. I have heard so many times, I remember sort of stumbling through my conversion, right, and hearing all of these attempts by, I don't know, our cultural zeitgeist and, you know, late 2000s or whatever, to tie the Catholic Church and the Nazis together, right? There's a book called Hitler's Pope about Pius XII. There's all this. Can you speak a little bit to Nazi persecution of Catholics in particular?
Yeah, that whole thing is very interesting. But so one thing I would like to point out with that is, you know, we in the culture, so I don't want to, what the Nazis did in their ideology was evil. But when you kind of like narrow in the individuals there, like Kolbe was known, like certain Nazi soldiers would come and give him gifts. Like he was friends with some of them, and the Germans for the most part loved him too. Right. And so the relationship there is a little more complex than just like all Nazis, bad guys, like a bunch of Red Skulls. Right. And then
they're human beings. They're not cartoon villains. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, but, what's interesting, the fact that Germans like targeted Poland in particular. Mm-hmm. So Auschwitz was built at first to eliminate like Poland, like to eliminate the Polish culture and all of that, right? And if you look at history, the grand scheme of things, Poland was a kind of country that ended up always saving the West when it came down to like the thing. Like it was
that.
Like the it was kind of it's kind of interesting though, because it ended up being this wall that like, you know, when the Battle of Vienna and all these things, Poland come in. So it's almost like the spirit of Nazism, you can say like Satanism, or whatever, kind of knew that and wanted to destroy that first before going for the rest of the world, right? Mm-hmm. And so Sorry, can you repeat the initial question?
Yeah, I was just curious about digging into persecution of Catholics and the Poles in particular.
So yeah, so Catholicism and Polish culture is tied really closely together, similar to like Mexico and other countries. Poland actually doesn't have much memory of its pagan past, which is pretty interesting. So there's no drawing culture from there. It's like completely, most part, like Christian culture and stuff like that. So it's part of really deeply rooted in our identity. So like, if you want to destroy, you can say the Pole, you can, you also have to target like their Catholic faith, right? And so it's because of the Catholic faith and stuff that it did end up being successful, like in the Battle of Vienna or any that kind of stuff. It's not just solely because of power or will or whatever, right? It's very rooted in
The Nazis were rounding up priests and sisters and stuff in a big way, right? To sort of break the back of the Polish will in World War II.
That, and you know, someone like in specifically Kolbe was always combating things. He was like always a thorn in their side, right? So he continued his magazine ministry and the militia of the Immaculata in Poland too. So when Nazism was trying to, you know, putting out propaganda of how Poles are like rats or whatever, you know, that eliminate them, he did, would put out the opposite, right, in his magazines and stuff like that. So to some extent, it was also, and it wasn't just Kolbe. There was obviously others that were helped in this thing. So, you know, as Catholics, we always look towards like joy and the hope, and the you have to crush that in order to crush the individual. So that's why you would target sisters or brothers or different ministries.
So,
like,
so I'm curious about this. This is kind of a, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be politically incorrect or controversial, but we'll see.
But if it is, it'll up viewership.
There you go. Exactly. So Poland has World War II Nazi persecution. They're invaded by the Soviets. They're invaded by the Nazis, right? And it's split down the middle. The Nazis go through, take over all of Poland until Stalin pushes the Nazis back, right? And then Poland, for all of their hardships, gets to live under the Soviet Empire for the next half century, right? And we see that the same sort of persecution by this atheistic state. Why is it, and this is not just to Patrick, but he might know a little more detail here, but why is it that Poland it never secularizes, right? You can look at the demographics of that. You look at the Soviet bloc countries today, and they're the most secular nations on planet Earth and all these things. Poland seems to have not done that. Poland seems to still be closely tied to their Catholic roots. I've just always found that fascinating.
I will say though that you know, there is a secularization happening right now. So if you spoke to people within my generation or younger, most of them are following the church or look very illy on it. Ill on it. Polish people also tend to be very I don't know, like emotional to some extent. So like in, you know, we have this like cold exterior, but the interior is like really soft for the most part. So, so they can be very easily persuaded by poking at that heart. So when the biggest, you can say, thing that helped steer people away from the faith was the scandals of the church. So because it was so closely rooted to the church, people believed in it, trusted. When they heard that, that was like a big stab in the back, right? Like we, you know, like how can the priesthood and all this that is so deeply in our history do that? And so that you'll hear that a lot, like, you know, like the phrase is like, oh, what, you know, I'm not sending my kids there, they're going to be touched by the priest or something. So there is a little bit of that, but as far as like, I don't know, you guys, you might have like a different I would be here to hear your perspective, but I also think it's just like I mentioned before, the fact that there is no, it was a little disconnected from when the Enlightenment happened, but also there is, like I said, there's no memory of its pagan ways necessarily. So I think it's just so root, like it's almost impossible for Poland to exist without Catholicism existing too. It's like, you know, some people might view that as a negative thing, but I think it's like, and there's various stories of Mary constantly appearing there and saying that Poland is always that she's going to do whatever she can to protect Poland from
Mary won't leave the Poles alone. It's awesome. Right. Way to go, Poland.
There's a number of Marian apparitions in Poland too, aren't there?
Yeah, there's one that's like officially recognized by the priest, and I think it's called Gieszwald, which is kind of like Our Lady of Lourdes. And then there's an apparition that said that happened in a, what's called Lehen, but it's not officially recognized by the church, but they built a humongous basilica there in honor of it. It's almost comparable to St. Peter's in the Vatican.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And people take pilgrimages there and stuff too. And then obviously you have Our Lady of Częstochowa. So I know there's like the three big, those are the three big ones.
Right.
Is there any sort of new evangelization movement or anything in Poland the way you've seen it in the United States? I mean,
no, actually. So
there's not?
This is a huge plus of the U.S. Like, the U.S. is pretty based when it comes to, like, driving towards Catholicism. Poland is going through this weird, almost like, Protestantization. Like, so there's this thing where, like, oh, Mass feels too sad, right? Like, that. And so, like, they started bringing in a little bit of, like, for the younger people, like, the guitars. So they'll have, like, there's nothing wrong as, like, a side worship like that. I don't believe it should be, like, how the Mass is presented. But they do have, there's been this push, I forget what the movement's called. It's, like, a particular movement where now there's, like, kind of, like, this kind of worship space. They're bringing in a band and stuff. It's not a replacement for Mass, but like younger people prefer that over the Mass. And so it's like this whole worship space. They bring a bunch of bands and stuff, and they'll sing with their hands.
It's all the gather hymnal's fault. Yeah. It all comes back to the gather hymnal.
And so there's, and then they, you know, and then, so there's a lot of like that, what's it called? Like entertainment and emotionalism of value that's drawing people in. But what's it called? But yeah, so people, and I don't know how to explain it. People seem a little more adverse to like traditionalism right there over there right now. It's kind of like when you mention like Latin Mass or whatever, they're like, I don't know. But so it's more that, but I don't know if you had a different experience.
Yeah. So like from an outside perspective, because you've been to like Poland many times. And so like, you've kind of seen that kind of change. But like for me, I definitely think when it comes to like Western countries, like it's gotta be one of the stronger ones with like the faith. But I did notice like, I guess some of the things that came earlier to the rest of the West, like in the 70s, right? That's kind of starting to happen now. Like you mentioned, like the guitar
stuff.
Slow
ripple. Sort of behind us. Yeah. Because,
exactly. Like the child Mass, like you were talking about that. Like the priest brings like the kids to the front and stuff like that. Kind of like more inclusive participation kind of things, which like
70s US stuff.
Yeah. stuff. But it's like, from what he's told me, like it's barely starting to come to Poland. But something that I have noticed is like, every church that I went to, like, most people like kneeled for communion. Right. And that was so beautiful and so surprising. Cause like when I visit Mexico, like I'd say like, it's also like stronger, like in the faith than a lot of other, Western countries, but I think it's like starting to become a lot more affected, with like, especially like, you know, just with like reverence and people like falling away from the faith.
Just sort of modernism creeping in. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I definitely did notice like a stronger faith, but it's like creeping in for sure, like but yeah,
well that's why we got to get Honest to God airing in Warsaw and Mexico City, Guadalajara, Krakow. We're coming
in the spirit of Colby for sure. Exactly. Which he had a radio show also that was part of his Militia Maculata too. He actually invented a certain device particularly so he can broadcast to more people.
Cool.
Wow. Dude, we should totally change our name to Militia Immaculata. Spoko.
We'll pray about it.
Okay. Guys, all right. Well, this is awesome. Before we close out, where can we find Triumph of the Heart? When and where?
So you can go, right now it's in the editing process, so there's no film being released. It's set to release on his feast day in August, like that's the goal, this August 2024. But you can go to triumphoftheheart.com. No, just triumphoftheheart.com. And they also have a link in there to the Kickstarter if you would like to donate. We're trying to raise money for post-production and just show interest to executives that there is an audience for this type of film too. So it serves kind of like a dual purpose.
Yeah, please do that. We're going to put that in the show notes and let people know. I mean, if you're watching, if you're listening right now, check it out, Triumph of the Heart. And let them know. I like that. I was hearing stats outside a minute ago. You were mentioning it with Janice. What were the?
Well, so the goal is 80,000. I think we last checked it raised 72 now, and that's
good.
And post production.
Yeah, for the post production stuff. So, and we released the Kickstarter on January 8th. So what? It's been like 2 weeks and almost hitting the goal, which is great.
Wow.
But in what's it called? You know, don't have that be like, oh, they're almost to their goal. I'm not going to do it. It's always nice to have more than because you never know what comes.
That's awesome, guys. St. Maximilian Kolbe, pray for us. Really appreciate y'all being here. Really appreciate the time. Really appreciate you producing.
Oh, it's been fun.
Really, really appreciate the void of nothing to my right that is somehow keeping track of everything that's said and putting it down below. That's all the time we got.
Yeah. Shout out to our overlords as well.
Shout out to our overlords. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This has been Honest to God on AM 1160 The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. Producer Julian.
Signing off.
Over and out.